Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard. And today we've basically got part three of the Repatriation podcast. I'll say it again this one time. If you want to watch a great independent feature film, watch Repatriation on Amazon Prime. This one is worth watching. This podcast has both collaborators, producer and lead actor Ryan Barton Grimley and writer-director Douglas Mueller. I managed to get them both on Skype at the same time, and we had a little bit of fun. Maybe you listened to the other two podcasts, maybe you didn't. I interviewed each guy on his own, and now I've got them together. We got into the nitty-gritty of collaboration, had a little fun joking with each other. All in all, I think it's a pretty good one. Here we go. Here's Ryan and Doug. Did you guys get a kick out of hearing each other's? Did you listen? I sent you the audio files, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't actually listen to it. I got to be brutally honest with you. But
really?
but that's how I roll, guys. I kind of go through life in a warm haze.
Well, I guess you can't answer the question, did Doug surprise you with anything he said then?
It might be funnier just to, I don't know. I planned on it.
I mean, everything he said was complimentary, so it's not like there's any real...
Son of a bitch, Ryan, damn it. Damn it, I wish I had. Darn it. Anyway. Well...
Well, but then I can throw it at Doug. Doug can at least tell me if...
Yeah, I did my homework. It was... Well, I didn't listen to mine. Maybe I listened to part of it. I don't know. Because now I remember what you said at the end. So I guess I did listen to mine. But I listened to Ryan's first, and it was a lot of fun. Despite being friends for 10 years, I still learned stuff. I guess we had a very superficial relationship before I listened to his podcast.
You mean facts about his life or about repatriation?
No, his life and just his journey was just, it was fun to hear about Ryan before I met him. And I think he covered it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's true. I think, look, there's people who know me who don't know anything. Because, you know, we just talk about things in life.
Yeah. Right.
And not about that hobo I stabbed in high school.
Jeff, I don't think we can use the word hobo anymore.
No, it's an ugly, ugly word.
Oh, my God. That's pretty amazing.
I was going to get back to that original idea just in case there's something else. So, I mean, Doug, there was things about Ryan's past you hadn't heard, just spending time together and making films together. But was there anything about repatriation that was like, oh, I hadn't seen it that way or any of that?
Oh, you know what? The parts I did think were different, and I couldn't remember. You know, I think, like, I listen to both of them, and I go, oh, well, these are two totally different stories, which was, like, the catalyst, like, how we eventually decided that we were going to work on it together. And I heard, you know, I listened to mine, I listened to Ryan's, and I thought, you know what? Either one of these could be right. I actually don't fucking remember which one of these happened.
Oh my God, that's such a great lesson.
You approached me.
I remember writing it, and I remember just like, you know, I don't remember it being like, hey Ryan, let's make this movie. I feel like, you know, you had given me your stuff, and I was just giving you some stuff I had worked on, and it wasn't until a few months later that you're like, oh, you know, this, I read this, and I want to like tell the story, but I don't even remember if that's how it went. But I feel like the first things were not as deliberate, like, let's make a movie, just like, oh, here's the bullcrap I'm working on, and you know, and it being reciprocated, like we were just swapping, you know, each other's scripts and stuff as you know, just being supportive friends like that. I don't remember it being like, you know, like a strategy about trying to make a movie at all at that first stage. I'm not right. I don't know.
Maybe those were there. Maybe I kind of just forgot all those earlier bits and just basically remember because I remember we went out and got coffee and I was like, I think it's great. And you were like, I've gotten all this feedback from other people and they hate it. And I was like, I don't listen to them. Let's make this thing. And you're like... But that, I mean, I'm always like, who cares what everyone says? Let's just go do a thing. I don't know.
Well, you know what's funny is it shows that collaboration is just another form of relationship. Because you know what? In my personal life, my girlfriend and I could argue over who pursued who more in the beginning. You know, like she'd be like, nothing would have happened if I hadn't chased you. And I'm like, you... I'm the one who did the work. And she's like, no, I'm the one who made it happen. And yeah, she's terribly wrong, but you know what? I can't change her perception. You know, that was her perception. Her perception was she was working her ass off to get me because she wasn't inside my head. Right. So
I'm sorry. I don't believe. I don't know if I've ever seen a woman work hard to get a man. We're always doing the work. It seems.
But I'm smoking hot.
Well, I'm surprised that the most positive response I get are actually from vets. I'm bizarre because I never, in many ways, I was very apprehensive to share this with vets because I didn't, in many ways, thematically, I'm taking a shot at blanket adoration for vets. But as it turns out, a lot of vets are pretty cool with that.
And I think they're really aware of how they're generally portrayed and how that it's kind of a sham. I think they more than anyone are dealing with that, which is
But also you're in the film, there's a few characters who are real vets and they're presented very truthfully too, you know, whether it's the old guys who give them the advice or, you know, the young guy played by John who's guarding a parking lot. Those are very truthful portrayals.
Right.
You know,
they are.
Of what it's like to be a vet. Like, you come back and everyone might offer to buy you a drink here and there, but you also come back and, you know, maybe the best you can do is watch a parking lot for a while. You know, it's.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you honed in on a truth,
so
right?
Good, dude. Whenever that scene comes on, I just look at it. It's just so tragic. It's so sad. You're like, fuck, man.
Well, God.
It's funny because for me, that scene, I watch it and, you know, it's the tension of is he going to call you out or not?
Right.
And oddly rooting for you, even though I shouldn't.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fun way. I mean, I was really that scene was written in post-production. We shot that as a pickup later. And, you know, one strategy there was to kind of show that side of it. I mean, we were trying to, it was weird to do this movie about a vet, but not really kind of address any of these vet issues. Not that I want to make, you know, an issue out of it, but, it's still important. You know, I'm kind of rambling here, but one of the first scene, we had a much longer scene initially where the older vets talk about the difference of being like a, you know, getting out of Vietnam and never wanting to tell anybody you were a vet because everyone hated you. And the scene was really slow and performances weren't great. So we ended up trimming it down to almost nothing. And I regret that because it was, my dad who, was a vet, this was his experience. And when he told me this, it's something that, I thought really played into, Ryan's character to be able to celebrate it. Like, you know, to be able to be told from a vet, like, hey, you know, we had it shitty. You should make the best of this.
You're a hero, man. Live it up. Get your free drinks. Let's go. Yeah.
I thought that was a good way to kind of hit both at the same time.
Yeah, no, you didn't want to be preachy, and you didn't want to, you know, and it's funny because you keep in your head, not to tease you, but you keep saying, you know, making a film about a vet, but you made a film about a not vet.
Right.
I mean, you really did make a film about stolen valor. Yeah. So really what you handled that issue and everything else was handled tastefully and respectfully, you know, but you didn't have to, you know, you would, I think we all know you turn off the audience if you have someone stand there and say, I am going to now make the political point that will make people happy.
And in some ways, maybe that's, you know, why the first scene got cut. Maybe, you know, it was telling a little too much of that preachy story and not, you know, focusing enough on the characters and the story at hand.
I liked how it ended up, though, like what we did keep ended up tying into that scene with the real vet and supporting the overall kind of plot and twist. That was really interesting how that ended up working out in the final cut. And it just, it's so clean and so, so subtle that, you know, many times people have come up to me and said, that thing you were saying at the end there, that was that other thing he was saying at the very beginning, right? And I'm like, absolutely. They're like, I knew it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, it wasn't like beating them over the head, but it just sort of slid in there. And it was just very, very subtly and well, really well handled. I've told many people, when people ask me what this movie is about, I say it's a coming home story and it's a war movie, but it's a complex war movie. Because it handles all the issues of war from different generations and perspectives in maybe a more complex way than a straight ahead, you know, war movie would, which I think is really cool.
Well, yeah, and to be honest, you know, and a little political or sociological, we live in a world now where such a tiny fraction of the population serves. I mean, right. It used to be large percentages when there was a war. Now, the film really is about how the public that doesn't serve feels about those who do.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's really what is relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in full agreement there. And I mean, that was Doug's, I mean, I feel like that first time we had coffee and we were talking about the script that you did have that you had sent to people that had said, oh, Doug, you're just writing this depressing stuff and it should be more formed and all this stuff. And you were like, but I, in my defense, I feel like I remember you saying this. You said, in my defense, what I'm trying to do here is write everybody else's perception of this guy. And that ended up being kind of the strategy we went through the whole movie with. I mean, it kind of engulfed my performance. It engulfed the way that you shot the scenes, other people's reactions to my performance. I mean, it kind of stayed true to that, which is...
Yeah, it's a weird thing, and, you know, going into it, but, you know, casting everyone else, it was something that I repeated a lot, which was, you know, hard to, I think... You know, and trying to bait actors and good actors into coming doing one scene is kind of hard. But, you know, I was trying to and truthfully tell them that the fact of the matter is it's an ensemble piece where the scene that you're in is kind of about you. And you're the center of every scene. So, and how we perceive the main character, even though he's the main character, how the audience feels about him is dictated by what you do, not about really what he does. And that's what makes this all unique, is that it's this ensemble that kind of buoys his credibility. And, you know, Chad's character, aside from, you know, remembering his buddy's drink, doesn't have like a whole lot of like great, you know, he doesn't do a lot of stuff to make you think he's cool or bad. I mean, towards the end, has this, you know, scene with Camille on the steps that he's a dick in. But I think for the most part, you know, everyone else is, you know, it's all a reflection onto him about what other people feel and not really, you know, him directly.
Yeah, no, actually, what you just said, what you both just said, really clicked for me that, yeah, Ryan plays Chad, who is on screen almost every second of the film and is the constant throughout, and he expresses nothing about his true self, and he shares nothing. He's just bouncing around, and it's about everyone's reaction to him.
Right.
But at the end, you know, we get a hint why he's doing it. We're all the gaps we fill in and all the motivations I'm assigning to him are coming from what other people say and do.
And, you know, Ryan brought up the, you know, when I was first sharing with this script is one of the, one of my friends who gave a lot of good feedback and always has, was like, well, this, you know, this, you need to make a, this is a hero's journey. You need to make, you know, he needs to do this and he needs to do that. And, you know, and these are all very traditional, you know, Joseph Campbell kind of, you know, traits. And I was trying to say like, no, this is the opposite of that. This is the opposite, which is not a popular, you know, this is not what everyone's aiming to make when they sit down to write a story or make a movie. But I thought it was, you know, movies like The Swimmer and The Christmas Carol, I think are great examples of this fun way to tell this story. And this book, I don't know if I mentioned this in the other podcast, but I read this great book called You Know Me, Al. And it was a one-sided conversation about somebody else. And they were hilarious. And it was this brilliant way of telling the story where the protagonist really doesn't do anything at all. And it's the characters around him, or in some cases the antagonist, who tell the story on their behalf. And I love this angle. And it seemed, you know, like a fun way to go.
And by the way, just Monday, I was on the phone, actually on Skype, interviewing a filmmaker who lives in Paris, France, who was in Film Invasion LA in 2017. And he named The Swimmer as one of his top three.
No way.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And well, I was like, you are not the first person to mention The Swimmer.
I remember watching The Swimmer, I think after we had that little coffee meeting. At the very beginning, you were like, you should see this film, The Swimmer. And I went and got it at Cinephile, this really nerdy video shop that's still alive next to the New Art here in West LA. And I saw it and was like, oh my God, I totally get what he's trying to do here. Yes.
I'd always liked The Swimmer, but I didn't watch it before I wrote the script. It'd probably been 10 years since I had seen it, because I didn't want it to screw too much with, like, I didn't want to remake it. That didn't,
you know. Right.
But after I finished the first draft, I did watch it before I did the second draft. And it was helpful to, like it was helpful, even though we didn't make it in, but like our scene with the pickle, you know, when I remember watching The Swimmer after the fact and being like, oh, well, you know, late in the game, they had some people who were kind of funny. And when I watch the movie now, I'm so grateful for having a scene that was a bit lighter, and like, you know, that as the whole story gets darker, and especially seeing in the theater with a bunch of people, you know, hearing them laugh at Ari and laugh at the pickle and laugh at his performance, which they should, is I think just the right timing, and it's a great just a little gem in this kind of dark area of the movie that I'm very thankful for. And I maybe wouldn't have done it had I not seen, I feel like something, there was something in The Swimmer that said like, oh, okay, I can, you know, this can be light for just a second. And that felt okay. And that was nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think it gave like a little respite in the middle of the storm, and then kind of gave you the chance to kind of double down after that, you know. It was awesome. He's really funny with that damn pickle. It's hilarious. People just die whenever they see that. They're like, oh my God, what's going on with that pickle?
So many pickles.
But it's really his treatment of your character, though.
Yeah.
Because in the
through,
because it was, and I know there's a lot of useful baggage there with who you cast and whatnot, but also it's that, you know, we've been watching people almost call us bluff in a very serious way so many times, and like Doug said, it's lighter, but I mean, he's also one of the clearest bluff callers.
Oh yeah.
But it's not in a way where you're like, the audience has to be like, is this where he gets his ass kicked?
Right.
It's like no free pickles or whatever. It's no free shit for you.
Yeah.
And I love, as an independent filmmaker, I think one of the few things you have control over is costumes. And I remember a few weeks before the shoot, I saw somebody wearing like this fisherman's hat, and it just looked like the laziest hat I've ever seen. And I saw this hat, I go, oh, dude, this is what he needs to wear. Like, I love, like, there needed to be just this huge contrast of, like the guy on the bottom needs to call him out. Like, if you're doing convenience store eating pickles at midnight with your floppy hat on, the sky's the limit. There's nowhere to go but up. And I love the idea that the person who's going to call him out the most in the most raw, blatant way possible would be a guy who's essentially opposite of the military honor persona that Americans get. You know, Americans love shitting on the convenience store clerk who, you know, he's a foreigner or whatever. You know, this like the stereotype of this guy being, you know, a bum. For him to be, you know, the most clear-cut, raw call-out, I thought was – that was my whole strategy behind that. And I thought Ari killed it.
Yeah.
Well, as long as I got you both on for the pleasantly unusual podcast of having collaborators on, I should probably encourage you to not just talk about the film but talk about collaboration in general and how you guys collaborated, because it feels like you collaborated – at most stages.
Yeah, well, I want to steal the floor and praise Ryan for being a fantastic collaborator, because as I said earlier in the podcast, by myself, anytime that I had to ask Ryan the anxious question about doing more or doing pickups or reshooting something, he was always very enthusiastic and very supportive, and I think that's rare. And so very publicly, Ryan, I can't thank you enough. Thank you very much.
Look, as an actor, you have to be available to things that are completely unpredictable that are sent your way. As a director, you have to do the same thing. You know, as the producer, that's your entire job, literally. Because it's very easy to plan a shoot, but all the other stuff is the stuff that, you know, makes it, you know, where you kind of earn your keep. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's always conscious, but at the same time, if you're surrounding yourself with people that you do trust, then it's, you know, it's not about you necessarily. It's about the journey of the overall project, which, I mean, I think Doug again and again was like, well, I mean, I don't know about this, but I think it will work. And I was like, why the hell not try? I mean, we're making a small film here. Like, you know, there's going to be plenty of times, hopefully, in the future where we're at the beck and call of some corporation trying to make a project. Like, we won't have the opportunity to do that. So why the hell not do it? And Doug said this amazing thing to me that I don't know if I've ever said this to you, man, but when, cause you know, I was doing post-production on Elijah's Ashes the same time you were doing Repatriation, and the cuts and stuff. And I was, you know, belly aching about something related to my edit on Elijah's Ashes. And you said this thing, you said, hey, Ryan, you know, just relax and go make a movie. Like, have fun, enjoy the process. And he's like, and I was like, you're right.
And how long were you guys friends before the first collaboration, like official?
2005, 2006.
Yeah, I think so. Probably three years, 4 years.
And this actually represented the first chance you guys had to work together, right? Because there was one that fell through.
No, when Ryan's feature debut as a director on The Truth, he hired me as the production designer. And then after that, we did a handful of little webisodes, like a little web series, that he also directed, and I was I did the art department on as well. So we and you know and to be totally humble, we met doing doing event lighting. So we were both kind of, you know, working hard physically, and you know, I certainly, you know, I was just a minion, and Ryan was a guy in charge. But you know, the idea of working together to, you know, get to the, you know, get the show ready was something that we had done a lot of, even before.
We had a lot of stressful gigs. We really.
Yeah. You know, we've been pushed up against the wall a number of times with a schedule or limitations. So I think, you know, in a way that helped us kind of roll right into making movies together, because we had, you know, unpacked trucks together and, you know, done a certain amount of production together already.
Yeah. And I think we trusted, you know, each other's instincts, and that it was like, because I mean, when you're in these kind of stressful situations, where it's a film shoot or some kind of event where, you know, it starts at this time, it has to all happen by that time, and you have that crazy deadline, and it's always time versus money versus resources. At the end of the day, you know, the people who really show up for you, and you're like, hey man, you know, the shit is hitting the fan, can you take care of this whole thing so I can deal with this thing? People who pull that off back and forth, you know, you definitely have a level of kind of battle tested kind of trust with those people. You're like, well, you know, if all hell breaks loose, I know that we can at least do this. And so, I mean, I felt pretty relaxed when we were shooting in Iowa. Not all the time, but some of the time, I was like, you know, we can totally pull this off. We've got the people here. Once we got the people here, we've got the camera. Like, we can do this. Like, just basically, as long as I remember my lines.
You're so funny that you always reduce your performance to, you know, I just had to know the lines.
I know. It's just self-deprecation, man. I don't know. I feel like the death of all actors is if they start buying into their own art.
Oh, hell yes. And, you know, I just watched this week, I watched the David Bowie documentary that HBO released, The Last 5 Years.
Yeah.
And for that last album, there was this, you know, edgy, completely underground jazz group that he discovered through a friend, and he sent them an email saying, it would be such an honor for me if you would work with me. And, you know, here's these guys in the documentary saying, the guy, like, so I read this email, and I'm like, it would honor you? You know? But, you know, he at 40, you know, 50 plus years of being one of the best recording artists in the world, and he was still humble and not like, it's an honor for you to work with me. No, he was like, you know, collaborating with you would make me proud, you know. It so keep the humility going. It worked for Bowie.
Right.
Well, I think if you think you have the answers, and this isn't just for actors, it's directors and writers as well, if you think you know how it works, you're probably missing a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know. And that, like, being open to collaboration, suddenly those things start closing, and it's just like, it's a little boring too. It's kind of nice to not always know and go and discover. It's part of it, right? I don't know. It's pretty cool.
Well, and you got to pick that team right. If you pick the team right, collaboration is essential.
Totally.
And it sounds like you guys organically became collaborators.
Definitely. And I mean, we, all the way through the process of releasing the film, we've just been, you know, at one point in time, Doug was like, okay, I trust you to go do your job as a producer. Try to get this thing out there, man. I'm at a loss. Like, go for it. And so, you know, I was like, I'll do my best. I'll try. And, you know, start pushing it out, and it was awesome. It's been an interesting, amazing journey, man.
Well, and after talking to both of you, I mean, it feels like it every step of the way, even when there was a role that was solely, you know, on one of your shoulders, you know, there was consultation and awareness with the other, you know, even, you know, when Doug was writing it, he was like, here, take a look at what I'm doing and give me some feedback. And when one of you was editing, it would move back and forth. And, you know, the collaboration was throughout the entire process, it sounds like.
Yeah, I'll tell you one funny story I like about collaboration and trusting Ryan is right after Repatriation was done, I think I had another gig or something, and so then Ryan did the first cut on it, and then you know, said, here you go, you know, why don't you finish it? And I was aching to do it. It was fun seeing the movie, but I thought, oh man, I can't wait to, you know, get my hands on this. And only to find out that many of the decisions that Ryan made were like, I would watch the footage and see my options. And it was like, oh, well, yeah, this is, you know, there is only one path across this stream, and it was already late.
That's funny. Yeah. I remember handing over that cut to you, and I went, I mean, I think I got some decent stuff here and there. There's some sections I don't know what to do with, man. Like, I was like, I'm at a loss on those, but I tried. You know, I try to hack something together. I try to stay away from the minutia of the performances for sure, because I was just trying to more, I don't know, kind of in a functional way, see, like, we have enough meat here. Do we have enough meat there? Because we also kind of knew we were probably going to go back and get some stuff. We were okay with that. We had made peace with that, I feel like, right away, which I think is actually a great strategy that I think should be employed on all indie films, because we have such short shoots, you know, and it's tough and confined you know, there's always a big difference between what you set out to shoot and what you end up getting, and in a remarkably awesome way, you know, and in the same way, like as a producer, when I was trying to get it out to festivals and, you know, get a distribution deal, you know, I would consult him for sure. I'd be like, well, this is what I'm thinking. What do you think? And he'd be like, I don't know, man. Or, yeah, I think that's great. Or, what about this? And yeah, we were just kind of open to it, but we both knew that we were kind of going for the best product, I think. So, you know, that's helpful, and definitely not always the case.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'll heap some praise on Ryan. And to step back too, you asked about how, you know, naturally it was to collaborate, and I agree with Ryan. Sometimes it was very easy, and sometimes it was, you know, challenging. You know, when I would ask Ryan about doing, you know, pickups or reshooting a scene, which happened, you know, twice at least, you know, I didn't call him the moment I thought of that. You know, I sat on it for as long as I nervously could, because they were hard. You know, it was a hard request. And even though I get along great with Ryan and feel I can share him everything, you know, I was still extremely reluctant and very nervous to tell him how I felt about that, despite how cool he was about my return, which made it all the more surprising and rewarding to, you know, have your response be so, you know, forthcoming and welcoming to the idea. There's something else I want to say about collaboration, but I forgot. I'm out.
There you go. That was the final podcast we're going to do for Repatriation, a film you should totally watch on Amazon Prime right now. What else should I tell you? You can go to discoverfilm.net. for all you need to know about this podcast. Every short film that I've interviewed the filmmaker, you can actually watch their short right there. All the feature filmmakers, there's links to their films. You can also listen to all the podcasts, whether it's a interview podcast or a DF4Q podcast. At discoverfilm.net, you can learn about the film festivals that I program.
and some other cool stuff, so I recommend you visit. Thanks for listening.